This is the DS106 Good Spell, Episode 8.
Good Spell, with John and Marianne, a good spell. It's half an honor and it's everything you wanted to know. Tune into the DS106 radio show. Intellectual conversation, the leaders of the game. They are bright, they are sweet, so go on, give them a tweet. The DS106 Good Spell Show.
Welcome to the DS106 Good Spell, digging into the online course DS106 Digital Storytelling 106, which runs at the University of Mary Washington in Virginia, USA, through Marianne Funes's string of 106 bullet points or pearls of wisdom. In each episode, we'll cover one bullet point posted by Marianne in a blog post at 1:06 a.m. and it was 106 posts on our DS106 Tumblr. I am John Johnson, up here in Glasgow, Scotland. At the other end of this Skype call down south is
Marianne Funes. Hi, good evening, and can you hear me okay?
Yep, you sound great, Marianne. It's good to talk. We're ready to go. And this bullet point here, and we keep coming back around this topic, and I'm really interested this week because I'll maybe get to that later on, but the bullet point is cultivating open is hard for some. I am one of those some. So what do you find hard?
Well, I tell you, John, if we had planned for this, it wouldn't have come, you know, in this kind of way, it wouldn't have come at a better time, because actually it turns out that next week I'm doing a presentation at a conference precisely on this topic. When I actually opened up our planning document to check what we were doing today, I thought, wow, I can't believe it's all going to be around open education and open sharing and why, you know, it can sometimes be a hard thing. What's interesting for me about this, I think, in the context of the S106, and maybe this is what we'll talk about today, is that aside from the fact that the S106 has taught me to make many things, the undercurrent for me has been also one of just learning to work as an open educator. And it's been a tough journey. It has been very hard for me. It's interesting that this at number 8 becomes something that is more personal to me and my own journey through the open education landscape. It doesn't come naturally to me. It has been difficult to get to this point.
It's kind of coincidental. You're saying you're going to next week, on Tuesday this week, I'm going to the ALT conference in Edinburgh, which is on open education, and I'm going to be talking with my colleague Ian Stewart for a very short time about GLOW, Scotland's national intranet, which is my day job at the moment. And so open has very much been in my mind this weekend as I'm beginning to think about what we're going to say. I'm also really excited in that I think Jonathan Worth is going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Talking, and you know, a bunch of other great people some of whom I know and have met either virtually or really. But I'm very much looking forward to that on Tuesday in Edinburgh.
I imagine Jonathan can do a plug for his new course. Jonathan will be talking about Fauner Nation, which is the Fauner open course for young people that he's starting in the next couple of weeks, I think.
Brilliant.
So it may be that's what he's talking about. That sounds like a really I'm already kind of part of it, and I've been doing some little bits of publicizing, etc., for him. But it sounds like a really exciting thing to actually offer an open photography course run by him and others to young people to learn. And it's a wonderful. Example, I think, of, you know, the sort of what open education can do.
So I think we still need to dig into this idea of, you know, the fact that it was hard to cultivate this openness.
Let me tell you about the conference that I am going to, because I think that will tell you something about the hard. It's the Higher Education Academy running a conference, and the theme of the conference is Heroes and Monsters, Extraordinary Tales of Learning and Teaching in the Arts and the Humanities. So it might say something about what attracted me to it and how come I'm doing the presentation, because part of what I'm doing there is to talk about really looking at the barriers to open sharing, to being an open educator, not so much in the context of the technology, but much more from a psychological perspective. What are the psychological barriers that we find? And I would say that the thing that has been hard for me has not been the technology, has not been anything that I could point to, but it's been more about coming to terms with a lot of my own limiting beliefs about what's possible, what can be done, who can I trust, how much, what should I disclose, not disclose, what would happen if I do, etc. And I think that's what the sort of the hard part is about, really, for most of us, if we stop to think about it.
Yeah, and I guess maybe, and I think I slipped into some sort of openness in education almost by accident, because I was interested in getting children involved in publishing online, and I wasn't thinking of this as being open education. I just was thinking of this as being a good technique for getting a real audience for my class and giving them a real task, or making tasks more real for them. And I don't think I really considered it that much. And I started blogging myself about education. I'd blogged about other things before, but about education on the back of that. But I didn't suddenly make some sort of conscious thought about, oh, this is out in the open, I don't think.
I would say the same. In that I didn't consciously set out to do this, but I did set out to learn how to, as I thought about it then, and this is about, what, 3 or so years ago, learn how to transfer my teaching online. And really what I was familiar with and what I was thinking about was much more the kind of learning management system idea. So, learning how to put my courses on the web, sort of thing. And then indirectly, and as a result of that, me having started to learn about Moodle and learn how to work in a kind of more closed environment, I started to learn about open education. And that's where all my beliefs about what was possible, what could be done with being, with being off the web rather than on the web, as Alan Levine likes to say, that's when it started to become inspirational, really. I saw a tweet, I don't know who from, a couple of days ago, and they were talking about the difference between, open education and learning in the open versus, doing it the more traditional way. And it said the difference was having to learn versus loving to learn. And I thought, wow, if it can do that for some students, then, maybe it's worth it's worth keeping going.
Yeah, it certainly is, I think. And I mean, this sort of idea of starting in a closed environment, if you started, say, in a private Moodle environment or some other LMS, do you think, and this is of sort of professionally great concern to me at the moment, do you think that leads naturally to openness, or do you think you were just lucky to escape the LMS?
I think I was just lucky.
Right, okay.
I think I was just lucky, and I found this group of people that, you know, taught me how to make art. And under the guise of making art, they kind of changed all my beliefs about actually what was possible and what we could and should be doing on the open web. But it was sort of as a subtext rather than an explicit learning objective.
Yeah, so
I was lucky to find DS106 is what I would say.
Yeah. As I said, professionally I'm involved in GLOW, which is an intranet in Scotland for education that started out as a very closed system in about 2007. Mm. And about 2010 added on some features, some WordPress blogs and wikis and the likes, which could be made public.
Mm.
And we're refreshing the whole thing at the moment, rebuilding it from the ground up. And some of the tools that are already in it are quite closed. Microsoft SharePoint 365 is quite a closed environment the way it's been set up for us. Mm. But we've got a principle behind it that we should be aspiring for open. And it's trying to, I mean, encouraging educators to share even in a closed environment sometimes is tricky. And in Scotland we tend to have a feeling my stuff's not good enough, you know.
We've got Rochelle. She was on Twitter, and she's listening. And Rochelle would tell you that about her version of DS106 that she is running at 3M. Mm. That you know, in a way, although you would say, well, 3M is a closed environment, but actually, just the whole notion about, you know, encouraging open within a closed environment is not trivial, even though you would say actually they are in a protective space. But in a sense, the fact that you are having to reveal elements of yourself and who you are and your fears to your peers, it's not trivial, which is what I suppose takes me back to this whole thing of our own personal barriers and our own limits in terms of, you know, our fears and the things that actually would stop us and not really to do with what's possible in the sort of technological realm, but it's much more about, you know, the normal human fears we all have about being found out in some way. Yeah. That we are not quite up to scratch.
Yeah. I think though that you can be open without, because somebody is open online doesn't need to sort of bear the innermost thoughts of their soul or anything like that. You can still very easily control, in fact maybe more easily control.
I see that now. I see that now that I've had the opportunity to explore and to learn all that's possible and the different degrees of what you can do. But I would say that when I was outside of it, it seems to be much more of a sense of either or. It's almost like if you become more of, you know, an open educator, it must mean that you have to share everything. But of course, it comes from a place of ignorance often, because you don't know what's possible. Mm. And you don't know, just as you're saying, how much is actually possible to control. Of course, all of these things that we do learn as a byproduct of DS106 to kind of manage and weave the web in such a way that actually we share what we're comfortable with. We make explicit decisions about how much we share, what we share, who we share it with, and what channels we use to share those things with. So you really only learn. It's like that poster that I think Jim Groom did about the it's from a famous film, I think, that some things have to be experienced before they can be believed.
Mm.
And I think there is something about that it's almost a catch-22 for those of us who are wanting to help support other academics to come into this. It's almost like a catch-22, because until they jump in and try it and learn, there is, I think, a lot of misconceptions about what's possible.
Mm-hmm. And just getting a tweet from Rochelle herself there, saying layers of open are possible if you give it a chance. And I think it's maybe just that. It's just if you find something that you're very comfortable with sharing, and do it maybe in an enclosed space. But I think once you get the benefits back, and the benefits could just be a bit of ego polishing that somebody likes what you do, or it could be that somebody adds value to what you do, or somebody uses what you've done to add value to something else.
I was just looking to see if I could find it. When we were talking about this with Alan a few days ago, he was commenting on the article that I wrote for the conference on my blog, and he goes, "The article looks great," and he quotes from it, and he says, "I want to focus on the inner barriers academics wanting to operate in the open web encounter and how they overcome them." And he puts ... out in the open. So there you go. Yeah. I thought that was lovely.
I think Alan's probably a fairly extreme case of an open educator, and a very, very inspiring one. The other things which we probably don't have time to go over at the moment, some of the other barriers are things to do with things we've talked about already, about intellectual property rights. And if you're working for somebody, if you're working for a university, college, school, institution, they may have claims on some of your work.
Yeah.
And you may have a desire to open up. I certainly recently in my own work found it very difficult to sort of narrate what I'm doing because of government procurement regulations and this sort of horrible Kafkaesque world of trying to get something done, which seems very strange to if you just come in from a primary school. So there's, I suppose, as well as the psychological barriers, there are some barriers, and some of these may be psychological. It may be just because we don't understand them well enough to know that we could be.
But I mean, what you're raising, I think, the very serious point of the kind of friction that exists often between, you know, what the individual might want to do when they are part of an institution, part of an organization, and the rules and regulations that that organization kind of subjects them to. And then, you know, who owns your, so we go back to, as you say, the whole copyright thing, and who owns and who has the right and all the stuff that happens is that we are talking about now in terms of the, you know, putting academics courses online, and some of them actually being forced to do that and to share, and of course the whole thing then stops being about choice and starts being about you know, you being forced to do things and to lose ownership and so on. And you know, it's not going to make people feel like they can trust. It's much more likely to make people afraid and want to you know, and to want to hang on to things.
Yeah, so I think we've run to a wee bit over time, as usual. Since I think that's a pretty good place to leave things, except maybe just to say that we've both certainly felt a good warm glow from being open, and the more open you are, quite often the warmer you get, and the more goodness you add. We'll be back next week. I'm just going to play out with another wee bumper.
Digital identity. Who we are on the web. Who holds our data. The new flesh. To graph this new flesh. The computer screen has become the retina of the mind's eye. And reality is less than the network. The time has now come to reclaim that control and embody the new flesh of the web.
The DS-106 could spell in 106 bullets on DS-106 radio for life.